Welcome home. We are WNST. AM 1570, Tassel, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. It is bye week, and I've been away watching balloons in Albuquerque and the Eagles and the Sphere and taking my wife to do bucket list things that she wants to do because she almost died 10 years ago while I was gallivanting around watching this crappy football team. But at least Joe Flacco was a part of it. Now he's a part of a different crappy football team, and we have our own crappy football team. It's 1-5. It is bye week. I am getting out and having crab cakes to soothe my soul. And when I get to Costas later this week for my birthday, I'm going to have Maryland crab soup. I'm going to have fried shrimp. I'm going to have crab imperial because I want to feel like King Henry or King Trump or King Harbaugh or King Steele, or just I want to feel royal. And I'm going to be watching baseball. So a lot of baseball, a lot of sponsors out there with baseball games on the basement over in Catonsville, our friends at Costas and Dundalk. I'm going to be at Coco's in 2 weeks with scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. My tastiness is all done now, courtesy of Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughter. Please go out, support local businesses, whether it's my favorite Chinese place in Happy China or whether it's Fiesta Mexicana over in Route 40 in Rosedale. Support some local businesses. Go and see my friends at the Jerk Hut and get some delicious peas and rice and eat good things as the weather cools off and chill out. John Harbaugh's not getting fired. He's not firing anybody. I've written a letter to John Harbaugh that is about as spicy as that burrito I had in Albuquerque last week after the hot air balloon that I think I'm still paying for. Luke Jones was spicy. He was down at the ballpark in the locker room that everybody abdicated in the aftermath of another loss to the Los Angeles Rams. It wasn't as ugly as others were, but there are elements of it that were quite ugly. But in the foreground of all of this is the real humanity. And I talk about me being thrown out of the media, and I reference this with John Harbaugh. You know, one of the real losses of being thrown out of the media, there are some people I care not to see, and I'll leave them remain nameless, but Craig Heist was not one of those guys. And Heisty was my stadium mate in 1992. I had a landline in that press box seat that you have been sitting at 19 years with my name on it that I'm not allowed to sit in. And Heist sat next to me all of the years through all of the Tom Capps and Howard Scherrs and Alan McCallums and Casey Willits and Ray Bachmans and all of the people here that ever contributed to building my company. Craig Heist was always the guy that Ray could call and put on with Haney attendant. Yeah, I'll come on with you. And, I took a picture of Heist, Luke, and I don't want to make you cry because I know you love Heisty, and I'm going to give you all – I'd rather talk about that than a 1-5 football team or a Me rebuilding too. Baseball team. I'd rather give love to Heisty. But I saw Heisty a lot in recent years at Costas. He was a regular at Costas in Dundalk. He was friends with the Triantafillos family. I saw him at the bar there. I swear to God, I think I took a picture, he and I, somewhere. I can't find a picture of me and Craig. And I finally found Captain D when I got back from Albuquerque, and I was happy about that. Another incredible loss this week. I mean, it's, you know, I got befriended by the big wheel. Len Burrier befriended me last week on Facebook after I saw him at the 75 Colts thing. So fandom and my role in it and everyone's role in being involved in all of this. Heisty was a guy that was in every locker room, beloved by the Washington Nationals. And dude, I thought of him the other night, and I got to find this picture because my wife and I are walking around the Cosmopolitan Hotel the first night we got there. And there's a place in the, you can Google this. It's called Beauty and Essex. And Heisty, in the beginning, I always thought he was from Laurel because he always told me he lived in Laurel. He's like, I grew up in Essex. I'm like, no wonder you talk funny. you know? So in the case of Heisty, I took this stupid ass selfie that is me, and I was going to send it to him and anybody from Essex. I was going to send it to my Pizza John's goons. I was going to send it to Blondell, Miller, Schuller, all of them that harbor themselves in Essex and say, it's not Dundalk. Like Heisty used to say, at least I'm not from Dundalk. And we used to argue about who owned the brass nipples at the poop plant, you know, but I took this goofy picture. It's Beauty and Essex. And I was going to send it to him. If I share it with you, and I think I can share it with you, Beauty and Essex, and it's a guitar jeweler in the middle of this crazy disco of a thing in Vegas. And I thought, Beauty and Essex, that's for Craig Heist.
I think that's the first time anyone's associated beauty with Craig Heist. And he would laugh at that to this day.
He laughed at everything. That was
He
the beauty of
did.
Heisty.
I love that man. I really did. And this is, I want to talk about it. I can't guarantee that I won't get choked up a little bit, but you said something, you mentioned that he was someone that you could call, if you're a radio station programming a radio station from 6 to 6, whatever your live programming hours are, you could call him any time of year and ask him to talk about just about anything on the local scene. Orioles, Nats, Ravens, Commanders,
Terps,
Wizards, Terps football,
Caps,
Terps basketball, Caps, Georgetown,
Georgetown,
Georgetown, if they're re relevant.
Virginia, even, yes.
And as someone, look, I mean, it's, you have people in the media, you have beat reporters that are responsible for covering one team, typically your writers, right? But when you're talking about radio, when you're talking about television, you tend to cover some combination of teams. And certainly, I haven't t covered the Terps in recent years, but certainly I've covered Terps football and basketball. I've covered the Ravens and the Orioles, but never covered DC teams. I mean, I've covered some couple Navy games, He covered everything
He
around
covered
here.
Dr. J at the Kapp Center like I did.
Yeah.
I mean, we
And
went that we had the same pathway, he and I.
he was, I mean, obviously he had worked for 106.7, the Fan in DC here recently. Obviously, longtime WTOP for years ago, went for years and years, did their updates. I mean, part of the soundtrack of me covering baseball was Heist for a long time, not in recent years, but for a long time was his in-game updates,
Sitting there next to you, filing
Craig
updates at
Heist,
25 after
Baltimore.
there, yes.
I mean, he was just everywhere. And I think the thing that, and anyone who, you don't have to be a Baltimore, Washington sports media junkie to be familiar with him. Heck, if you listen to any ESPN, NFL, Sirius NFL radio, like any of those shows, when games are going on, they go around the league, right? And everyone knows, oh, let's go to so and so in Jacksonville to see what's going on with the Jaguars and Colts, right? He
Well,
was
I
that
love
guy
that
in
like the
Baltimore.
one-on-one sports 25 years ago is that guy,
He
right?
was that guy in Baltimore for or DC. And so even if you ne didn't necessarily know his name, I guarantee you heard him plenty over the years if you've heard any kind of sports radio in that realm. But I mean, Heisty, it's funny. I've said this to people I know, and even to try to describe him to my family, because my family had never met him. I honestly, Nestor, I've never met his wife. I mean, you meet people in the sports realm, and you don't necessarily hang out with them socially, but you spend a heck of a lot of time with them. I mean, 60 plus Orioles games a year on average for
Sitting
me.
next to you. He literally was your
I
seatmate. He
mean,
was my seatmate in 1992.
Steve Molesky sat between us, and Heisty was on. We flanked Steve Molesky, and we.
You know who sat on the other side back in the early days was Joe Gross from the
Okay.
Annapolis Capitol.
Okay.
And he was another just legendarily interesting. There was a guy named Chuck Franey who was also there were a lot of people, Mark Jacobson, just a lot of great baseball people that would sit there and talk baseball stuff. Henneman was a younger man at that point. But that whole entourage from Schmuck through Tim Kurkjian and just all of them. Heist was a part of the furniture of. He was the guy all the out of town guys when they would come in would,
He knew everybody.
he knew everybody. He knew
He knew
everybody in
them.
the league. He was the most
He knew
sourced dude in the league.
all the visitor PR people because of so much of, I mentioned radio stations locally that he worked for, but I mean, Heisty was the key of, or the king of freelance and having 8 different jobs and getting a paycheck from 10 different places and all of that. But because you do that, and as a fellow radio guy who's going to post game or going to pregame, certainly can relate to wanting to be in more than one place at once on any given night, right? Especially something weird happens at an Orioles game where there's a brawl or something like that, you kind of want to hear from both sides, right? Well, if you're only one person, you can't do that. So the number of times I gave Oriole sound to Heist, or he gave me something from the visitors clubhouse, and I just to be aware, to be a better reporter. I mean, that's part of the gig as a radio guy. The number of times your recorder
That's how we get good at this,
yeah, I mean, the number of
right?
times your recorder has an issue, craps out and your battery goes dead, or someone accidentally unplugs your cord, whatever, you help each other out. So I mean, I'm not gonna lie, Nestor. In the midst of the disappointment of Sunday's Ravens loss, and obviously I'm thinking, what questions are gonna be asked, talk to all that. I plugged my recorder into the malt box, and for people who aren't familiar, that's basically a central area that everyone, cameras and radio, audio recording devices all plug into, so you don't have 20 different microphones at the podium. I plugged my recorder in, and I didn't see Heisty's role in there, and it, it got to me. I said this to people, and I mean this in the most endearing way possible. It's kind of like my crazy old uncle. He could be grumpy. He had a there were times he and I would get into not arguments, but some hotly contested debates about the state of the Orioles or the state of the Ravens or something with the Terps or whatever it might be. But he was also the guy that be the first to be willing to give you the shirt off his back. And that's you don't always find that in any walk of life, let alone talking about a competitive career like media, right? Where reporters are trying to get stories, getting exclusives,
Hell, I'm
talking
just
to,
trying to get a press
yeah,
credential.
sure. But I mean, he was one of a kind. He really was. And it's so strange to think that I'm not going to be in a press box with him again. And I know so many others have shared that. And like I said, I mean, he was so, when I think back to being in the Orioles press box or covering Maryland games in 09, 2010, you're in that environment for the first time. And no matter how much schooling you might have, or you might be told how to do something, you don't really know until you start doing it, right? There's on the job training, and that applies in any walk of life, right? He's one of those who I saw it even to this day when you'd see an intern walk into a press box, or, well, he'd be willing to help someone or answer some questions or just say hello or where are you from or where'd you go to school? I mean, one of the probably one of the we got to know each other pretty quickly, but he went to Kenwood, as you mentioned, in Essex. My dad went to Kenwood. Now they didn't know each other any. I mean, I don't think they know each other. I mean, certainly
My
Heisty,
mom went to Kenwood. You knew
but
that, right?
yeah, but you have a connection like that. We talked about Pizza John's, Costas. You think about the places that mean something to you. And
Well, it's the only place I ran into Heisty was at
I mean,
Costas. It's the only
no, I
place I'd
mean,
see him.
in the summertime, I mean, the number of times, if you're a Facebook friend with Heist, the number of pictures you saw of him cracking open a half dozen crabs after covering an Orioles game or a Nats game, I mean, it was uncanny how often he was there. So, man, I'm going to miss that guy. I really am. And, he meant a lot to me. I have friends, we all make friends in various walks of life. But like I said, he kind of had an uncle kind of vibe for me, in the sense that, yeah, we have our disagreements about a certain opinion here or there or whatnot, but man, it was all love at the end of the day. And like I said, someone who cared very deeply about his friends, loved to laugh with that guy. I actually, Dave Ginsberg, very close friend with him, and obviously Gins for people who might long time AP
Well, that
writer,
whole mafia, throw Pete
but
Kurtzel in there, all of these lifer guys,
I
man.
yeah, I would say among sports media and personalities and writers and journalists that I've met, Dave Ginsberg might be one of is not might easily one of the funniest individuals I've been around if you really get to know him, because he has a wit to him. I don't know what's funnier, Gins or my memory of Craig Heist imitating Gins in the press box these last 15 years. And I'm really going to miss that. I really am. And like I said, just a caring individual, someone who loved what he did. I mean, I mean, he was everywhere. I mean, that guy rarely took a day
Oh,
off.
he loved sports to the end.
Loved it. Absolutely
And there
loved
are
it.
days where
And
you and I battle that,
oh,
or
sure.
battle
Of
how
course.
much we like it now versus how
Of
much we
course.
loved it before, versus being quite honestly the only ones willing to hold John Harbaugh accountable for being 1-5 because the gig changed through all the years.
It's not
I've
fun when
struggled
that
with that,
happens.
you know. Heist worked into it and got more work as he got older. Yeah,
Yeah,
literally. Yeah.
and I know you'll appreciate this as someone who also was close with Mike Messina. Mike Messina was his all-time favorite. I would kid him to no end about his love for Mike Messina. And I guess what the old
I mean, I
joke.
was a part of that after
Yeah,
every game. He would go out
of
and drink
course.
beer with us, you
Well,
know?
and the old joke was always because Heisty would start off the post game. The post game, stand around at the locker, and it was always the joke that he'd start off with a statement, and Moose would say, "Craig, that wasn't a question." So I've heard that story so many times over the years. I mean, that was before my time, but just when you talk about someone who's covered as much as
By the
he
way, I reached to
has,
Mark Messina. I just want to say to have him on this week, who also loved Craig Heist through our friendship and all the Hooters and Balls and Baja Beach Club appointments we
I've
made,
heard some of
Van
those
Halen
stories too.
and Bon Jovi and all the good times that we had back in the day. But man, you know, you're making me smile thinking about
I
those times
mean,
in the 90s because, like, I never had a crossword with Craig Heist. You know,
I
and as
mean,
much as I'm shat upon by various media people, you know, Heist be the first guy to walk across the bar at Costa Sale. I mean, my wife's crushed, and my wife only, you know, really knew Craig from having a press pass herself and running sound and needing Craig for sound for the same reason you need Craig for sound.
I mean, if you're
Because we, but despite what Craig Chad Steele would say, we really work. It's like really what we do.
anyone who works in radio, you've needed to lean on someone else at some point. That's why I'm certainly willing to help someone else out when their recorder dies or someone, a photog accidentally unplugs your cord, whatever. I mean, it happens. You're covering hundreds of practices and games every year, right? I mean, that's going to happen. But man, his time, there would be times when I wasn't even at an Orioles game, and I took a Saturday off to go hang out with my nieces, who he would ask about all the time, even though he'd never met him. He saw him on Facebook all the time, and he'd ask how the niece is doing, and he'd light up when I
Which
tell him.
speaks to his emotional intelligence about knowing what's important to you.
But there were times when I wouldn't even ask him, and he would send me Orioles post game sound. I mean, that's what kind of person you're talking about there. So
Well, I
I'm
appreciate
really
what
going to be
Craig ever
missed.
did to help you, which helped me, which served the fans, which even
It made me
served
better.
underdog people, which
It
I know
made me
would
better.
disappoint the king of Kenwood in Craig Heist, who we lost. And you know, he sat with us at a lot of Super Bowls, and he would come by. So somewhere out there, 20 years ago in Miami or Arizona or some godforsaken place like San Diego, Heist sat down and did radio with me. I'm going to find it. And somewhere along the line, The Verge or Casey Willett or Ray Bachman took pictures of that. But I need to find a picture of me and Heisty. And I will. I shall. And I know I have a lot of tape of him around here. So, but I mean tape, dog. I mean, like, you better have a cassette player to be able to enact it. Luke Jones is here. He doesn't have a cassette player, but he does have bye week, and it is a Raven bye week. And as much as I love honoring Heisty here, there is the football team and the
Yeah,
bye
there is.
week, and Joe Flacco slinging it for the Bengals now. The Aaron Rodgers Steelers that we all laughed about. I mean, even Tomlin laughed when I sent him the picture of him and Aaron Rodgers doing yogic stances in the AI universe and praying things through back in April that they would be in first place with a handle on the division. And still having to see Lamar, and there's a lot of football left. And even though I. And Heisty would have been the first one reading my dear John Harbaugh letter. I could hear him come up to me at Costa saying, "Hey, you're a little hard on John this week, weren't you?" And how's the Lukester? And so
That's what he called me. He's the only one who called me that. He was Heisty, to everyone, and I was
everyone.
Lukester. I absolutely was. I will miss that, even though I don't necessarily like that, but I was cool with him calling me that.
So if Heisty hit you today, he'd say, "Hey, Luke, who ran out the back door on Sunday? I was at the Commanders game. You know, I got paid from the this and that, and the fan this and that. Like, Who ran out the back door? Because that's the kind of things that we talked about is
Yeah.
Mike Messina never ran out the back door. Joe Flacco never ran out the back door. Ray Lewis stands accused once or twice, but usually would show right up and apologize, and Kevin Byrne would get in his face and say, "We don't do that. The Modells own the team. We don't run from the fans support the team. The fans are important." Kind of the way that Derrick Henry's been trained, that the fans are important and has no problem with accountability even in his darkest hour. The accountability of all of this, the swirling wins of the league with good teams, bad teams week to week, and the Giants, winning a couple of games and the Eagles losing a couple of games, and who's coming and who's going, and Harbaugh's brother's winning all of a sudden. And so, this deep breath for the organization, whether it's firing Zach Orr, and I don't think that's it, or Bisciotti firing John Harbaugh, which is all over my internet, which is absurd. And my dear John Harbaugh letter that I hope everyone reads. I would say this is a circumstance where they're all the spotlights are going to be out and they're all going to be judged. And I'm already on the record for hating John Harbaugh so much because I hate him. I think they'll be 7-7. And I've said that. I think they'll catch their water because they'll get some players back. And I think inherently they're not a 1-5 football team. Inherently they were a banged up football team. Inherently they played really good teams. They've made some mistakes and blah, 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 blah. But the team that I picked to win the Super Bowl because I hate John Harbaugh so much, 7 weeks ago, I think looking at the schedule, looking at the realities of Dylan, whatever the hell his name is in Cleveland, and Flacco playing a couple of games for the Bengals or whoever will be playing by the time they get there, and what the possibilities of the Steelers will or won't be in winning the division or whatever. I'm not saying they're making the playoffs, but like right now, if I could go back to Vegas and walk back into the Park MGM, or if gambling were legal in Maryland like it is, and I wanted to take the Ravens to win. What would that make it? 1-5 and 7-7 means they would go 2-5-2, right? Or 6-2. 6-2, is that right? 6-2. 6-2 would make them 7-7, right? They'll go 6-2. That's what I think.
Well, and I would say I don't know if that's going to be enough because then you finish up with New England at Green Bay at Pittsburgh. And the Patriots are they're on the rise. They're certainly not a doormat this year, that's for sure. You finish with those three games, and those last two are on the road.
I think they'll be 7-7,
I'm
and
just
I'm
saying
saying I in
you
all
could
my
argue they need to
fair
be
and
better than that.
balanced criticism and what a jackass I am, such a jackass that they can't let me into press conferences and allow Jerry Coleman. And the extra seat now that like there's the we don't have space in the press box for you and all the nonsense, all the bouja I called Harbaugh out on in my dear John Harbaugh letter. The truth is, I think they'll be 7-7. I can't tell you how, and I can't say I'll tell you how. Lamar will put the cape on. They have good football players. They'll figure out the O-line because they have decent coaches. They'll figure out the defensive thing. The firing Zach Orr thing and the drumbeat for that, even you have been a part in recent weeks of saying, you'll make some changes here. I don't know. Maybe the WNST text will be coming and John lied about another thing on Sunday. Changes. I'm Midwestern dumb. I don't have no idea what you're in charge. How can I be in charge? I make $20 million a year. That's not my side of the building, Ness. I mean, I feel for you. I love God and I love my family, but Chad Steele doesn't work for me. So that's what my letter is about. But the reality is, I think they're still going to win a lot. I think they're going to make themselves more relevant than they've been. That's my prediction.
I mean, you would certainly hope so. I mean, like I said, I mean, I don't think anyone out there, even the biggest critic of the Ravens, the most negative, pessimistic fan at this point. Look,
Sometimes I'm accused of being that guy, by the way,
but my
so
point
I
is,
resemble that.
does anyone actually think they're going to go 3-14? Like, does anyone actually think they're going to go
Well, if Lamar twists his
4-13?
ankle in
Well,
the
I
in, yeah, right? Yeah.
okay, but well, same applies for the Bills. Same applies for the Chiefs.
By the
Like.
way, you believe he's going to play in 10, 12 days, right? I
I
mean,
mean,
you.
better. I mean, if he doesn't, then I'm starting to question
Well, I mean,
what's going on.
they blew hot air about him for 12 weeks, and we reported their bouja 3 years ago when it looked like he was going to get back on the field, and he didn't even get on the plane to Cincinnati. He was busy fighting with them about money and telling fans in Pennsylvania to perform fellatio upon themselves. All that's true. All that really happened. and sat there for 5 days till his girlfriend told him he
But
can't get down. So this is the leadership we're talking about here, and guys running out the back door, which is really fundamentally a telling part of a 1-in-5 program here that makes a lot of mistakes, and everybody looks around and say, not my job.
I mean, to go, I'm gonna stay with Lamar here. Those two injuries were more significant than this one. Now, were they fully transparent? Was there question about whether he could try to play at the end of 22 with that knee injury? I mean, there was probably some debate at least. The ankle, believe me, I saw him practicing in the 3rd week of December.
He
That
couldn't
one day,
walk.
he couldn't
Yeah.
even walk. I mean, he
Yeah.
legit is a bone bruise of the ankle. Like, that's a 6 week injury. I mean,
I'm not
yeah,
calling anybody soft or
sure.
hard.
Oh no, and I wasn't implying
Apparently
that,
the
but
COVID thing, and he couldn't play then, and
right,
just
I wasn't
like
suggesting you
this
were
is where
just.
like we're all pissed at. Pick your guy. You're pissed at DaCosta. I'm pissed at Bisciotti for the whole thing, and Chad
And
Steele, and
everyone's mad at
Justin
everyone.
Tucker. Everybody's mad at
Yeah.
everyone. It's everybody's fault.
Sure.
But at some point, it's going to be Lamar's fault. And as Sean Merriman said to me 2 weeks ago, hamstrings, dude, there ain't no
What?
guarantee that he's right by Halloween or Thanksgiving or eggnog season or. But to your point, they're making it sound like, and all the broadcasts sound like, well, they're getting him back. He'll be fine. Roquan's apparently worse, right? And I don't know what's worse, the offensive problems or the defense. I mean, we can debate this with Lamar back. Okay, their
The
offensive
defense
problems
with
get.
Lamar back. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, just a couple updates there. I mean, Roquan was starting to do a little bit of on-field work at the end of this past practice week, off to the side, not practicing yet, but you can tell when you see guys start to work out on a side field with the trainer, that tells you that the return, I wouldn't say necessarily imminent, meaning he's guaranteed to be back for the Bears game, but let's face it, he'll have a couple games off. And where did Roquan Smith play prior to being traded to the Baltimore Ravens? Where did his tenure end in not the most harmonious way, quite frankly, in Chicago, right? So I'm sure from the moment he hurt his hamstring in that Kansas City game, he looked at the calendar and, when it was at least a couple game injury, at least a few weeks, I'm sure he's itching to try to be back for that Bears game. Now, there's no guarantee. I'm not going to sit here with 100% conviction because you're still talking about it being just under 2 weeks out. There's a lot of treatment and work and healing that still needs to take place there. Same with Lamar. Like, I think, John Harbaugh even said in the post game, like, I can't say that with 100% certainty, but that's my expectation. Like, that's kind of so we'll see, right? I mean, by all accounts, the David Chows and the different sports doctors that you'll find on social media that will look at video and try to diagnose injuries, which isn't 100% accurate, but more often than not, it seems like those guys are pretty good kind of telling you just how serious injuries are. The expectation was all along. And what you said about Sean Merriman, it's why the Ravens didn't even try to push Lamar back for these last two games before the bye, understanding that
They might be sacrificing them.
if he has a setback, then yeah, it is over. If Lamar had played Sunday,
They know how
one,
bad Cooper Rush is, right?
well, yeah, of course they do. I mean, they benched him for Tyler Huntley, who they have tried to get rid of basically twice in the past, right? I mean, they told you what they thought about Tyler Huntley the last couple off seasons, but Cooper Rush was that horrible on Sunday. I mean, it was really bad. And I hear it. The offensive, he was bad. Like, we don't need to mention the other things. He was bad, period. And yes, the other things aren't helping him, but he was bad. But, to have Lamar try to play at less than 100% on Sunday, and heaven forbid, one, how effective is he going to be to help you try to win anyway? And two, at what potential cost and risk? Because if you're talking about him needing to miss another month, but because he tweaks that hamstring again, and he's on the shelf now for the first two games out of the bye, then you are probably done. Then it is over. Then you're looking at, I don't know, 1-6, 1-7, 2-7, whatever you're looking at. You're not coming back from that. So it's why I said 2 weeks ago when we were first having this discussion that, man, if you can try to steal a game with, if you could try to steal a game somehow, some way with Cooper Rush as your quarterback, and you're 2-4, then man, I mean, it's you feel so much better, but it's, you know, it is what it is at this point. You're 1-5. If Lamar Jackson's 100% for the Bears game, then automatically I feel better about the state of affairs. But does that fix everything? No, it doesn't. And that's why they need to go to work and try to find some answers on their offensive line, try to figure out some way to create a pass rush somehow. I mean, it's been non-existent. I mean, it really has been. It's been, you know, that John Jenkins play was like so shocking because, wow, like someone won a one-on-one and took the ball away from the quarterback. Like, oh, that's what that looks like. I mean, you know, it's bad. And now no Oweh and no Tavius Robinson, right? Not that those guys are great, but you still need healthy players to suit up for you. And now they're in a position where they need to go out and get a warm body at edge rusher at the very least. So we're going to see. We're going to find out. I mean, it's, you know, you mentioned, and look, I'm in agreement with you. I think they're going to get off the mat. But I'll say this, you mentioned 7-7. I see that those final three games, then I'm not sure 7-7 is going to be good enough because I don't have the confidence they're going to win those last three that you would need to mostly assure yourself of a playoff spot, right? I mean, I'm not getting into scenarios where Aaron Rodgers gets hurt or the Steelers completely fall apart and you can win the division at 9-8, right? I mean, I'm talking about trying to view this through the lens of you play better, and then everyone else kind of plays at whatever their level is going to be, right? You know, 10-7 is kind of the benchmark. So, you know, if they're not 7-7 or better, then yeah, that means they've probably dropped some games that you would view on paper as liking to think they're winnable, right? I mean, I look at this post-bye schedule: Bears at Miami, at Minnesota, at Cleveland, New York, home against Cincinnati, home against Pittsburgh, at Cincinnati, until you get to those last three games. So that's the stretch you're talking about. I mean, all those games should, and I emphasize should, because we're talking about a 1-5 football team. I'm recognizing that. But if we're talking about this team getting healthier and at least improving some of these areas, they're not going to, I don't think they're going to be able to address everything, right? I mean, pass rush is going to be an issue. Whether they can make it a little bit better or not is up for debate, but they're not going to make th this is never going to be a good pass rush here in 2025. I don't see that. You don't have the talent on the roster. I don't think there's enough scheming in the world that's going to create where you say the pass rush becomes this major weakness and now becomes a big strength. No, that's not happening. But can you make it better? Can you make it more viable? Can you improve your offensive line? Which might mean, hey, go give Corey Bullock a look, or give Emory Jones, the third round rookie who's practicing now, go give him a look at left guard because you don't like what Voorhees has done there, or you don't like what Falele's looked at like at right guard. You need Ronnie Stanley to be healthy, that's for sure, and that's in question now. So, you know, it's a lot. This isn't good. You know, just because I'm trying to paint a path or you're trying to paint a path does not mean that it's going to happen. In the same way that we looked at the Orioles when they were, I don't know, go back to where they were before the bottom completely fell out. Let's say the last week of April. And we were saying, okay, well, they're 10 under now. That means they need to kind of go 20 over the rest of the way to win 86 games, which might or might not be good enough for the third wild card, let's say. You start doing that, and what happens? Well, they're just not good enough. I mean, they played like a 500 team from the second week of June on, you know, the rest of the way, basically. You know, the Ravens do that. They play like a 500 team, or, you know, they're 7-4 the rest of the way. What's 7-4 the rest of the way get them? That's not a bad record. 7-4 means they're going to be 8-9, which means barring a Pittsburgh collapse, they're out of the playoffs. So that's what we're talking about here. I mean, you don't need to be a good football team the rest of the way. You need to be a great football team the rest of the way. And based on what we've seen through 6 weeks and understanding the reality of injuries and all that can take place, and just the crazy week-to-week nature of this league in a general sense, it's tough to love their chances at this point in time. So, we're going to keep watching and asking questions and seeing what happens coming out of the bye. And obviously, you have to win against the Bears. If you come out of the bye and lose, then yeah, then I'm ready to just say, all right, this is lost. But you've got to do that if you can. Then it's on to the next week, and it's on to the week after that, right? I mean, it
Well, let's talk
really.
about the O-line and the D-line, because without that, it's not the trade. My 7-7 prediction for John and for Lamar and for all of these. I mean, Ronnie Stanley is Exhibit A. Roquan Smith is Exhibit B. If Lamar's fine, that's why I ask you about Lamar. You rambled on about all of it. Lamar's fine. They have a chance. Great. But I don't know. No boom. The linebacking core. No pass rush to even think about. Always gone. And their two best pass rushers who weren't good enough 2 weeks ago are gone. Kyle Van Noy is usually the first guy to stand up on. Maybe if I cut my sleeves off my Curio shirt, wore my wife beater, he'd come on my show and talk about it. But even he had nothing to. I mean. The part where I wrote this letter to John Harbaugh that I hope everybody reads, it happened on another game where half of the locker room walked out the back door and has shown no accountability to 1-5 at all during a bye week. Like, there's nothing about this that should smell good to anyone paying attention. I mean, even Lamar coming back, but just like, what's going to happen to the line play? What else happens? Because I'm with you. Lamar's going to come back and they might still lose because of all the other holes in this boat. And then it's Lamar's fault.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's Lamar's fault, but when you're making $52 million, yeah, you are the best player and you're the franchise guy, and that's why I said, like, I can't sit here and say I'm shocked that they lost both games that Lamar Jackson missed, right? I mean, if Josh Allen goes out on Monday Night Football and injures himself and is going to miss a month, I'm guessing the Bills are going to go 1-3 or 0-4, right? I mean, that's the nature of it. If it didn't matter that much, why the heck are you paying him all that money, right? I mean, it matters big time when you don't have that guy. But that said, is Lamar going to be able to deodorize all of what's plaguing them right now? Well, they were 1-3 with Lamar, right? I mean, to put it simplistically, and look, I thought until we got to the second half of the Detroit game, I thought Lamar Jackson was playing incredibly high-level football through the first 2.5 weeks of the season, right? But the Lions game got kind of faltered in the fourth quarter. And look, his pass protection had a big part to do with that, but he wasn't as sharp. And certainly we did not see the best version of Lamar whatsoever in that Kansas City game. So not only does he need to come back, but you need MVP Lamar. And look, I don't have any problem saying that. I mean, that's why he's making the money he is. Like, I Part of some of the discourse, that you see, and look, there's so much discourse on Lamar Jackson. This goes back to before he was drafted, right? This goes back to him in college, where people want to blame him for everything, or the biggest Lamar fans don't want to blame him for anything, right? And the truth is, yeah, he is their most important player, and yeah, they're not going to win many games without him, and that applies for any team that has a quarterback that's worth a you know what. I mean, that's just the truth. I mean, like, okay, for every miraculous Nick Foles kind of scenario, how many times is a team season over when they lose their quarterback? I mean, many more times that scenario plays out than Nick Foles leading you to the Super Bowl, right? I mean, so those are great stories, but those are the exceptions. I mean, that's why what's so dire for the Ravens? Yeah, there are four teams that have come back from 1-5 to make the playoffs, but how many teams have started 1-5 and not made the playoffs? Many, 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 many more than those four. So the math is not on their side at this point in time. But you hope, because you do have Lamar Jackson and you do have some other guys that are coming back, you're hoping you can find a way to get a role. And yeah, the schedule plays a part in that too. They're not playing 2024 playoff teams in five of their next six games, as they just finished a stretch of five of six. So that should help, but you just roll the ball out and think everything's going to be okay. No, there needs to be all-time high level of urgency and accountability. And guys leading within the locker room. And look, I'm not even talking about talking to the media. There's way more that goes into that. You know, that's more of a symptom than those guys being accountable to one another, right? But you call it, it gets called into question, right? I mean, how much do you believe in your teammates, you know, when your defense is last in the league in scoring? How much do you believe in your teammates when you continue to fail in goal to go and inside the red zone? You know, how much do you believe in your teammates when you're down to the second string or the third string guy at a certain position? How much do you trust what you're going to do and stick to your responsibility versus the alternative? And the intentions are good, but trying too hard to make a play out there to the point where you kind of mess up your responsibility and leave your teammate high and dry, right? You're trying to make a play. I'm not saying that like you're doing it in a nefarious way, but how much of that is going on for this team now? How much of that can they curb as they get out on the other side of the bye and try to get themselves on a roll? I mean, these are fair questions. And even if they're playing at a really high level, even if they get on the kind of roll that they need to get on to talk about week 16, 17, and 18 being really, really, really important, then you still go back to some of the things we talked about even before this 1-5 start in terms of this team breaking through and handling adversity and not blowing fourth quarter leads and right. I mean,
Handling adversity.
yeah,
Handling adversity,
sure.
right? Yeah, you
So,
can.
you know, I mean, it's, you know, there are a lot of doubts, as there should be. They have earned these doubts at this point in time. Not talking about the big picture, talking about 2025, here and now in mid-October, they have earned these doubts. Now, not everything's gone their way in terms of the injuries, right? I'm not, you know, the Buffalo game, they had some bad luck late in that game. I mean, Buffalo was, you know, sparked by a touchdown catch off a deflection, right? I mean, we know that, but you're going to sit here and just say, oh, well, we're injured, or oh, well, we've had some tough luck, or oh, well, this. No, do something about it. You got to get off the mat. And if they don't, then yeah, we'll be talking about college basketball come Thanksgiving and how good the Terps are under a new regime, right? But you know, I don't want to be at that point just yet. You know, I like to talk about a path for them to get back on track. Am I totally confident that it's going to happen? No, of course not. But I also have seen this team go on the kind of roll that they need to go on now with Lamar Jackson healthy and playing at a high level. And but that involves others being healthy and playing at a high level, right? He can't do it all by himself. I want to point that out as well. But yeah, expectations are high for him coming back and playing at a high level. They need him because Cooper Rush ain't it. Tyler Huntley ain't it, that's for sure. So you need MVP Lamar coming out of the bye week. And yeah, to your point, yep, first of all, make sure he's healthy enough to play against the Bears. And if assuming he is, it's go time because they can't drop any more games. You know, I mean, that's when I say 9 of 11, that's acknowledging you have to go to Green Bay Christmas weekend. That's acknowledging you are at Pittsburgh the final week of the season. And you would think at this point, even if the Steelers falter enough that the Ravens are back into it, they're not going to have anything clinched or anything like that, right? I mean, even if the Ravens go on a roll, that game's good. You hope it really means a whole lot, but that doesn't mean it's going to be a guarantee that you go there and win. So, man, when you look at those games at the end, man, you need to play your butts off here over the next 2 months just to make sure that that matters, right? To even
My
get to that
professional
point.
prediction is they will rescue the season and they will make it interesting again. They'll be 4-5, 5-6, 5-6 and 7, 7-7. They'll what did John say 2 weeks ago? Find ourselves or find what it, find
Yeah,
find ourselves, I think is what
I
he
think
said.
that.
We have to find ourselves.
Yeah, makes
Well,
it sound
whatever
like
his bougie is, I wrote my dear John Harbaugh letter. Hope everybody reads it at length. I've said what I need to say. We'll talk about the football team here. I'm talking more overall for what 1-5 in an empty stadium and booing fans and pissed off people and tickets that they can't give away in the fan base, you know, and the weather changing and the bad baseball team and them trying to bilk the fans for money in this offseason. I mean, just where the
it all
money's
builds
going,
up.
where the flow's going, where the interest is going, and why 30,000 people with tickets on Sunday didn't want to go to the game. We're all trying to get rid of them.
It all adds up. I mean, it does. And remember, in one of our previous conversations, I even made the point in a vacuum, Like, if you just took Sunday for what it was, if you had no idea what the Ravens' record was prior to Sunday, but you saw the circumstances, no Lamar Jackson, right? No Roquan Smith, no Chidobe Awuzie, no Pat Ricard. And you know, hey, the Rams are coming in. Rams are good. I can't sit here and say in isolation that performance made me necessarily feel worse about the football team compared to what we saw the previous 2 weeks, where the defense was horrendous. And especially last week, you know, obviously their offense failed. So in isolation, I can point to a couple positives, but when you're 1-5 and you've lost 4 in a row and you're dealing with all that baggage and the baggage of past January failures, and yeah, to your point, the fan mojo on the heels of a wildly disappointing Orioles season, there's a lot of negative there. I mean, there absolutely is. And I'm not going to sit here and say that, oh, anyone's being too. No, of course not. Like, it's warranted. But
I'm not saying the sky's falling. Fix yourselves.
yeah,
And
I
if it's
mean,
accountability, integrity, character, standing up, honesty, truth, if that's a
those are the things you should
problem,
control.
and
Those are the things.
those have always been a problem for Greg Bader and the Angelos people, and that has been a huge problem for Chad Steele and Steve Bisciotti and Eric DaCosta in the post Ray Rice. Oops, I punched my wife in a glass elevator and I'm going to lie about it, and everyone's going to lie about it to get me on the field, not to mention the Justin Tucker fiasco. That's right under our noses, and they're 1-5 right now. And that's wasn't a story, but it is a story. Integrity and character and accountability above and beyond your 40 time and how many weights you can lift and how good you flash on film and like all of that, it's built into being a champion. And even if you're cheating like Tom Brady, hearing him in the post game speaks like a champion, walks like a champion, looks like a champion, is a champion, speaks in championship tones, criticizes in a championship way, holds accountability at the highest level across the board. Things that are missing from this franchise right now, in lots of ways that I see that really begin with Sashi Brown and Chad Steele and Steve Bisciotti and Eric DaCosta and how people are treated, how the community is treated, how the media is treated, how the players are kid gloved, and oh, we can't offend anyone. Oh my God, what would happen if they were asked questions? It's Dude, it's they're 1-5. They get what they get. You know what they get? They get the truth from me because that's what they've earned. They've earned the truth from me, and I've been here a long time. So I write from my heart, and I did.
To bring it back to talking about the team specifically, this 2025 team specifically, effort, accountability to one another, leadership within the locker room, coaching leadership, all of those things are the things that you can control. You can't, other than what Eric DaCosta might or may not be able to do by the trade deadline and working out the salary cap and can you take on a contract? Can you give up this asset? Is that player that you'd really feel would be a perfect fit? Is that other bad team going to part with that individual? All those things are to be determined. Some of this might just be their offensive and defensive line just don't have enough talent. Like ultimately, that's part of the reality here, I think. That might be, even if they recover to the degree that we think they can recover to at least give themselves a chance in December.
And part of that might
That's.
make Malachi Starks and Nate Wiggins and some of the young players on the come on the back end
They've got to be
look
better.
even worse.
Oh, well,
Because
okay.
if there's no pass rush,
Sure. Oh, sure. I wasn't
Malachi,
following. Yeah.
you know what I'm saying? Like this is
But on the flip side,
it
but
is
on the.
it is complementary in
No
that
question.
way.
But I would also say on the flip side, if those guys can be better on the back end, then that helps, maybe gives the defensive line an extra
I don't know, it's
half a
chicken
set.
or egg, dog.
Well, it always, but it is a give take. It absolutely is. If you can disguise and cover on the back end, you force the quarterback to hold the ball an extra half second, and maybe you get home then. But it's got to work in concert, right? And that's, they just haven't, they've just been so out of sorts in terms of what they've tried to do defensively. And frankly, since the first couple of weeks, what they've tried to do offensively as well, right? I mean, their offense the last couple of years under Monken, they were able to get in such a good rhythm in so many different ways, and they could beat you in so many different ways, and they were so efficient and explosive. They could run. Lamar was passing at an elite level, a higher level we'd seen than earlier in his career. And like this we talked about even like the Buffalo game where they score all those points, but they still had these times where you're either scoring really quickly or you're kind of going three and out, right? I mean, it's kind of been that feast or famine. We talked about that with the Orioles offense, not so much this year, but last year, right? And some of their downfall where they'd have these great performances and then other games where, score one run, right? I mean, when you're that hot and cold, when you're that high variance, man, that makes it more difficult. I mean, this defense right now begs to have an offense that can run the ball and sustain drives and win time of possession. And what's sad is they did some of that on Sunday. But, well, when you turn the ball over three times and you can't punch it in from the 1 yard line three plays in a row, yeah, it's going to get you beat. So, they're searching for answers. And believe me, I'm not going to sit here and say that I have all the answers because I don't, because I didn't expect this team to be 1-5, but here we are. And we're going to see what they're made of, right? I mean, and that goes to a lot of what you're talking about. We're going to see what they're made of because, as I said, the Lamar Jackson era Ravens, they haven't been in this spot before. I mean, nowhere close. I mean, it's 10 years. 2015, they started what, 1-6, I guess they did that year. I mean, season was over, right? I mean, that team was very injured and they didn't have the pedigree. Let me rephrase that, not the pedigree. They didn't have the on-field talent that we thought this group had, and maybe, not maybe, we overrated in some areas at the very least. I think that's obvious, and I'm guilty of that just as much as anyone. But we're gonna see because
Well,
they should it should set up to have a chance to make a run, but you gotta go do it. And
the next
until
couple
they,
weeks are obviously critical.
of
They got to get the
course,
3-5 and 4-5 and 5-5. But
absolutely,
so
got to get the 500.
I sat around the couch over the weekend. It's my birthday week, so I want to share some wisdom with you because I think of John Wooden on my birthday much more than Charlie Kirk. And I think of Sam. I think of Paul Manna and a bunch of my other Stacy Keibler, my birthday mates. But John Wooden was born on October 14th, and I share his birthday. And I'm a big Wooden guy, so I always share my be concerned with your character, not your reputation. Your reputation is what people think you are. Your character is what you truly are. But I saw Liam Cohen, who I never heard speak before, he's the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach, about Trevor Lawrence winning the big game last Monday. Of course, they lost to Seattle at home, as Jacksonville's want to do, because we always ask, is Trevor Lawrence, does he have competitive greatness? And this quote was about competitive greatness from Liam Cohen. And it says, competitive greatness is being your best when your best is required. And, Lamar Jackson hasn't had that. Ronnie Stanley hasn't had that. Marlon Humphrey hasn't had that. Roquan Smith. Anybody that's been a part of this where they didn't win a championship here has missed out. Whether it's Kansas City, Buffalo, Tennessee, San Diego, pick any of the losses in the playoffs that you want, any of the big losses, the kryptonite of Patrick Mahomes, whatever it is. Competitive greatness is being your best when your best is required. That is Patrick Mahomes. That is Tom Brady. That is Kobe Bryant. That's winning. And I would say this, and I want to give just a little bit of love to my former co-host here and former friend, Rex Ryan, who look, dude, you know how much like getting thrown out by Chad Steele. I sit here all day and I watch football on TV and I pet my cat and I do what I do, right? But watching the pregame shows has been the biggest bitch of mine over the last 3 years as to how bad they are, just in general. Like the Fox thing is just grotesque. It's horrific. CBS is okay from time to time. I thought ESPN really, really fell apart after Susie Colbert and sort of the Chris Berman era went away. It wasn't very good. And the NFL Network is just so patronizing and I didn't like Deion Sanders and I don't like Rich Eisen and I don't like their host and it's so pandering that I can't go with it. Mariucci's terrible. Just some of it's terrible. The ESPN pregame show on Sunday was so good, it lured me from the game. I was watching the Denver Jets game for like a half and I'm like, I'm going to put on, see what they're saying about the Ravens, see what Rex has to say or whatever. It's really good. I mean, the ESPN pregame show was really, really good. Rex Ryan was really, really good. And not just blustery like his old man who I did a show with. Yeah, loved his old. I saw a lot of his old man. It reminded me of him. But it reminded me of Rex sitting over at Orchard Landing and sitting at the barn and all the places. Roost Chris. Rex did shows with me everywhere. Rex came on here every Monday morning, and when Billick was the coach, and talked about defense and talked about his football team and talked about right and wrong and criticized the defense, criticized his offense, took the praise, took the criticism. He was preparing to be the head coach of the New York Jets, where he got a little bit of criticism. So I heard Rex and it was really good. And I'll wrap this just by saying we began it with Craig Heist and paying tribute to him, who was the best of us as journalists and reporters and a guy that got along with everybody and asked tough questions of everyone and stood at lockers and saw indignities in locker rooms and saw tears and cheers and beers and everything there was to see in locker rooms. And you and I have lived a life in that way. My John Harbaugh thing isn't about me in the locker room. It's about the accountability and dishonesty and lack of integrity of all of it. From Ray Rice through Justin Tucker, through who they draft and why they draft them and what they get away with. And they can't get away with 1-5. And I kept thinking to myself, the empty stadium is what's going to get John fired. Because if Steve's there, I don't know if Steve came to the game on Sunday. Steve was there watching it empty out 2 weeks ago because I saw him giving his.
He was there Sunday.
He was there Sunday.
He
Okay.
was on the field talking with Ray Lewis and Brady pregame.
I saw Brady and Lewis, but I didn't see him as
Yeah,
a
Steve was
part of
there. Yep.
it. Okay. Well, then if he witnesses his stadium emptying out
It changes
and the
things.
fan base is booing everything and the look of fear in the eyes of all of the out-of-town executive suits that he hires to sell hundreds of thousands of dollars of sponsorships into overpriced, ridiculous suites and the press box that they threw us out of for the Kevin Byrne little box that I'm banned from. I don't know what to say other than to present the receipts. And that's what I did for John Harbaugh this week, is presented the receipts. So we also presented the receipts to Craig Heist, who's the best of us. Anything else you want to say about Heisty? Or I know we all wish we could have one more Pizza John's with him.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm gonna miss that guy. Orioles games especially won't be the same because I sat right near him,
Well, maybe they'll let me come and sit with you.
heard his same jokes over and over. But I will definitely miss him. And I know you've referenced the idea of collecting people over the time of your life. Your lifetime and people who made an impression, good
That's
or
Dick
bad,
Schaap.
all
Dick
that.
Schaap gave me that. Dick
Yeah,
Schaap
yeah.
famously
But I.
collected people.
He's definitely one that I will, you always wonder how much you'll be remembered. I think seeing the outpour on social media, I mean, I posted, the tribute the Ravens put at his seat, the picture that I got with Steve Molesky and him at the last Orioles game 2 weeks ago. And I mean, hundreds of people that I'm not Facebook friends with, but I just shared it and tagged him, who you just see the comments and it's like, man, if only we could all be so lucky to have made that kind of an impression where that many people thought that way of you. Shows that no one's perfect, but he did some things right over the course of his life, that's for sure.
Jones is here. He will be there once they reopen things. And John's going to have them working like dogs here this week. They're 1-5. Nobody's going to the islands to sun themselves here. There is a lot of discomfort in the building in Owings Mills. And I don't just mean Lamar Jackson's hamstring. So we'll be here documenting it all. I'm going to be talking a lot of sports this week, probably some politics before it's all over because there are no kings in America. And I'll stand up for that. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive. Stay with us.